Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the HockeyThinkTank.com, a website for all player, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. Today's podcast episode is a little heavier than usual. We go through some tough stuff, to be honest with you, some tough stuff. And our guest is Brandon French. And Frenchie is a really, really good buddy of mine. A little bit about his background. He was a hockey player, grew up in Central New York, went to prep school, did the junior thing, and then was a player at SUNY Geneseo, which is a Division III school right outside of Rochester. And Frenchie is a brave person for coming on this episode. And a couple weeks ago, he reached out to me because he listens to the podcast. We're good buddies. And, he was like, hey, I got a tough story that I think a lot of people can relate to. I'd love to tell my story and maybe help some people out there that might be struggling through some stuff that I've been struggling through. And, Frenchie has dealt with alcoholism. He's dealt with an addiction to painkillers, which I actually didn't know until he mentioned it on the podcast, which as a friend is just it blows my mind. Went to rehab and now is sober, has a lot of big things ahead of him. His wife is pregnant, and he's got a lot of great things ahead, but this was a heavier episode, where we talk about some tough things. So I think it's going to be a really good learning experience for a lot of people. It's a very real episode, which is, part of the reason why I think it's going to be so great and reach a lot of people. But before we do get over to Frenchie, let's bring in my partner, Jeff Lavecchio. Jeff, what is going on in St. Louis today?
No protein shake jokes today, Toph. This episode was a little heavier. You're laughing, so maybe that was like a non-joke joke. I don't know. But, since this episode was a little heavier, I wanted to be a little more serious. Really, really relevant to have Frenchie on right now with everything that's going on with the Bell Let's Talk that's going on right now. It's ballsy. It's courageous to come on and tell his story. And as you'll hear towards the end of the podcast, it's really cool to talk about how he kind of started to think differently and want to start seeking help after he heard another hockey player's story about coming out. I'm not going to spoil it, but that was very interesting because now he's doing the same thing. And we have a lot of listeners. So if there's anyone out there, like, just know that it's okay. Like, you're not crazy. You're not nuts. You can reach out for help. Don't be afraid to talk to someone. Like, go and get help. You're not broken. You're not weak. You're actually strong if you go and get help. So pretty exciting that at the end there to hear that it was an NHL player's story going through kind of the same struggles he was that helped turn him around.
Yeah, definitely. And the Bell Let's Talk movement is unbelievable. I mean, it's absolutely amazing, especially how the hockey world comes together for it. And, one of the things that I think the Bell Let's Talk movement does, which is I think is the biggest piece of it, is Bell Let's Talk allows a forum for people who are dealing with mental health issues to come to the forefront about it and share it. Because just doing a hashtag, I don't think that's going to help a lot of people. But that shared adversity, that shared connection, when you know that other people are struggling with some of the things that you might be struggling with, I think that really helps people to, maybe gain the courage a little bit more to ask for help, which is, I've done it. A lot of people have done it. We've all gone through some tougher times. And, when I asked for help, and as Frenchie says in the podcast, when he asked for help, it's a game changer. And even the advice that he gave at the end, one of the most important things is, hey, it's okay to ask for help. Like, you'll find that when you do, there are so many more people in your corner than people that you think would judge you for having any kind of mental health issues. So, so strong of him to come on the podcast. Was unbelievable. And, I don't think we really need to say anything more. I think this podcast will kind of speak for itself. So, without further ado, here is Frenchie, Brandon French, on this episode of the podcast. We are really excited to have on this episode of the podcast, Brandon French. Frenchie, one of my really, really good buddies from here in Central New York. We go way back, had a lot of really good times together, consider him a really good friend. And, you know, this episode is going to be a little bit deeper, a little bit heavier. And, you know, Frenchie is, you know, one of the best guys that I know. And, you know, I think something that's really interesting is the fact that, you know, Frenchie came to me and called me and said, hey, you know, I think I have a story that I think can help a lot of people. And I think that's amazing. So, you know, Frenchie, how you doing today? And how's life in Central New York? Is it still like negative 50 degrees or what?
No, it warmed up a bit. It's like negative 10 right now. So I'm about to break the shorts out and go catch a tan.
I like it.
No, it's good. Yeah, just trying to grind it out through the winter here and hope for some warm weather coming up.
Yeah, for sure. Don't count on it. And but we appreciate you coming on, man. I mean, I think this is so brave of you, and I think this is so awesome. And you know, again, like I said in the intro there, you know, you came to me with a story that you want to tell and something that you think can have a positive effect on a lot of people, and you know, a lot of people can learn from. So you know, I think the first question that I wanted to ask you was kind of, you know, why did you come to me, and why did you want to tell your story? Because it's a tough story to tell, I'm sure. But why did you want to tell your story to so many people?
Well, I mean, for one, I think, you know, it's not something that people tend to want to talk about openly. It's, you know, I think it's pretty, you know, looking back before I knew I had any issues at all, I had heard of people with, you know, drug and alcohol problems or really any problems that had stigmas tied to them, and sort of just backed off. It was a little bit awkward to talk to people going through that stuff because you didn't really know how to relate. You sort of tiptoed around the, you know, the kind of harsh realities. So being on the other side of things, I sort of like to be as open as possible and, for one, just get through the awkward phase that most people tend to shy away from. Yeah, I think also, I guess we'll get into sort of the background of my story in a little bit here, but, you know, coming to terms with having a drinking problem, you know, which I think I knew long before I, you know, sought help and treatment and whatnot. You know, it's something that going through, you know, the AA program and being in meetings with people with various backgrounds and stories, it is a little bit tough to relate on certain levels. So I thought that, you know, with your forum that you have with this podcast, which is awesome, by the way, you guys are doing an unbelievable job. Big fan.
Thanks, man.
I think it was a good way, I think, for me to be able to kind of reach out in some respects to sort of let people know that it's something that you need to talk about. I mean, that's the biggest fear in anyone's mind that has been in my shoes before. It's scary as all hell to talk about. So I think to be able to connect to anyone out there who has gone through what I've gone through and kind of let them know, you know, it's very hard to connect with someone in an AA meeting when I raise my hand and say, you know, I have a drinking problem, had one in college playing college hockey. You got people who, you know, had a horribly rough upbringing, you know, picking out of dumpsters and had drug and alcohol issues all throughout their lives. And then there's me who's complaining about, you know, getting hammered at the bar in Geneseo. A little bit tough to connect on that level. So anyway, yeah, I think just the, you know, the listeners that you guys have, I think would, I think benefit from, you know, hearing some of the, you know, the ups and downs that I've had.
Absolutely. And we can't thank you enough for wanting to be on this. You know, Toph called me and said, you know, I have this buddy Frenchie and he reached out to me and everything that's going on with the Bell Let's Talk hashtag that was going on the other day. We thought it was just perfect timing. And It seems like a lot of people in professional sports, not just hockey and even high level hockey, college hockey, junior hockey, like, you know, where you developed your habits. There's a lot of pressure. There's a ton of pressure to perform. And I'm always advocating people to have positive outlets with their stress, whether things are going really well or things are going really bad. You know, there's good stress and there's bad stress. And you have to right. learn how to cope with those things and have positive outlets. Like one of them for me has always been working out, and now more recently like meditation and focusing on my breathing. And I would see so many guys that I would play with that would have those negative outlets. You know, I mean, I'm sure all three of us know guys, and maybe you were one of them, that, you know, you either get healthy scratched or you have a bad game, and what do? They immediately go and hit the bottle. And right. you know, it just, it, okay, one time, okay, but like you do it a couple times and that becomes your go-to, that's going to turn into a pattern, that's going to turn into a habit, which is going to turn into a lifestyle, which then turns into an addiction. So, you know, it's all about finding those positive outlets, positive ways to channel those negative energies. So thank you for coming on, because this is a real issue. I mean, Tolf and I both played hockey for a long time, and we both saw a lot of guys that, you know, could get kind of swallowed down a dark hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the big issues I've seen, with myself, and I'm sure, a lot of guys coming up through the various levels of hockey, you know, it is such a part of a player's identity and a person's identity, putting in so much time and effort through their entire lives and hockey careers. And then you get to a certain point, you know, in every player's career where it's sort of like, you know, you can take one path and keep, grinding away, or you can kind of sort of, you know, take on a different identity. And I sort of took one on that led to very, you know, big issues with me. I mean, I feel like I got to college and, I wasn't, the hockey player anymore. There were, you know, I was riding the pine or up in the stands, and I sort of needed a new identity. So I was the guy that people called to go out and drink. I mean, anytime, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever night it was, you'd call Frenchie. He'd be down to go out for a couple beers or, you know, 12, 15 beers. That's kind of what it turned into. And then, you know, you fast forward 10 years after college and you're still the guy that people call when they come into town. You got to step back and kind of look in the mirror. It's definitely, you know, I think a big part of the hockey culture is, you know, how hard can you work on the ice and how hard can you party off the ice?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's certainly a huge piece of it. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, you know, you said that you were kind of the guy that, you know, everybody would kind of turn to when they wanted to go have fun and they wanted to go to party. Like with that, did you feel a lot of peer pressure to kind of live up to this, you know, I'm the best buddy, like I got to be that guy and I got to be the best version of that guy. Like, do you think that's a big part of kind of going down the rabbit hole that you went to?
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely started as, you know, it was all fun. I mean, I didn't ever want to say no. I mean, I was always down to have a good time. And then it sort of got to be like, all right, I can't say no. Like I'm going to be, you know, called names that I probably shouldn't say on here, but yeah, I mean, there was definitely some pressure. I mean, I did a lot of dumb stuff that, you know, most people wouldn't do drunk or sober. And I was just ready to go, no matter what, just because that was sort of my new persona I took on. So I guess there was a little bit of pressure that came with it, but I, you know, I think I knew, deep down that if I wanted to say no at any point, I could have done that and sort of cut a little flack from the boys. But,
Yeah, no. So like one of the questions I wanted to ask you kind of going along with that was like, I know peer pressure is like a huge thing, especially for kids nowadays. I mean, not that it wasn't for us, but you know, kids nowadays are dealing with a lot of pressure and a lot of crazy stuff. You know, what are some things that you, and we'll get into kind of your sobriety and, you know, the process to your sobriety in a little bit, but for all the kids that are listening here, like what are some things that you learned maybe through AA or maybe just reflecting back on that time that you could have done differently in terms of being able to say no or being okay to say no, if that makes any sense. Because at the time, just kind of hearing you talk, and we've all kind of been there, a lot of times it is tough to say no, especially when it comes to having fun and especially when you're getting razzed by your best friends and stuff like that. So like, what are some things that you've learned about that process and, you know, what makes you comfortable in kind of saying no now as opposed to where you were kind of at your darkest times?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I sort of need to step back and look at the other, because I rarely, if at all, ever said no. I guess I need to kind of look and, you know, think back to guys who actually were able to say no and sort of, you know, how I would react and, you know, call them, you know, names and make fun of them a little bit for, you know, I would give them a map to the bar because they had never showed up on a Saturday night. So we'd kind of, you know, beyond that, it's like, okay, so the kid likes to actually, you know, go home and get a good night's sleep after a game and not wake up with a pounding headache. You know, can you really fault him for that? You would sort of, I think it kind of stems from having a little bit of, self-guilt a little bit or sort of knowing that you're not necessarily always making the right decisions and your teammate might be making all the right decisions and he might be, you know, in the lineup every single weekend and you're not, but you're at least out, you know, having a good time and kind of looking back at all of those things that I didn't do to kind of take care of myself that other people did do. I'm sure that played a big part in, you know, how my hockey career went versus someone who is able to say no and kind of take a little bit of flack from their teammates here and there. But as far as, you know, things I could have done, I mean, it really comes down to the fact that I don't think I ever really wanted to say no, but, you know, the times that might have felt a little bit of pressure, I think you do need to kind of put trust in the fact that your teammates love you no matter what. I mean, they're just like family. You know, you might not see eye to eye on the, you know, the party scene drinking 4 or 5 nights a week. But, you know, you all love each other in the locker room and it's always, you know, just fun and games, making fun of each other and giving each other, you know, shit for going out, not going out. So, I really think that that's kind of what it comes down to looking back. If I did sort of feel any pressure from teammates or peers to, you know, to do things I might not have felt comfortable doing, I think you just sort of need to know that, you know, the people that you care most about aren't going to care if you say no. And the people that you shouldn't really care about, you know, might be the ones that are giving you a hard time. And you just need to, I guess, not really focus too much on what other people are thinking about you. So
when you first started getting into this kind of cycle where, you know, it sounds like something bad would happen at the rink, whether you're not playing a lot or you're getting put in the stands. So then you start to drink. And then did the drinking then affect your play? And then you play less, so you drink more, and then is kind of like a vicious cycle, like a circle. Was that fair to say that was happening?
Yeah. I mean, so I think at the beginning of college, I wasn't a huge drinker like in high school. Like we'd go to a, you know, a big party here and there, like every couple months or whatever. And I definitely was overdoing it when I did go out. But as far as the, you know, regular drinking, that didn't really pick up until I got to college. But I think I worked very hard in the off season to come in ready for my first year of college hockey. And when I saw that, regardless of how hard I was working and the drinking hadn't picked up yet, I was still being, you know, healthy scratched quite a bit. And So I think I sort of was like, okay, well, I might as well go out and party and kind of see, you know, at least I'll be having fun and still be kind of sitting in the stands. And I saw the same results. So I didn't really have I didn't see any direct correlation with like how much I was drinking or going out versus how my play was being affected. And then, yeah, of course, like I was just like, well, you know, I find out I'm getting healthy scratch for a game Saturday. So Friday night, you know, bet your ass I'm going to the bar. Yeah, it was just a real easy, quick fix. I mean, that, like you said, it becomes your go-to. It's, just a quick fix and you don't have to worry about, you know, dealing with those raw emotions of being pissed off or upset or frustrated. It's just like, yeah, let's go to the bar and I'll deal with it tomorrow.
Kind of drown your sorrows and get out of your own head type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, obviously I'm not a mental health professional and neither is Topher, but, you know, I had a teammate in college, who actually passed away, over this past Christmas or two Christmases ago. I'm sorry. And he was the same way. He was in my class and, you know, he came in playing Division I hockey, came off a really good year, his last year of juniors. And, you know, he didn't play a lot right away. And, you know, instead of maybe working harder or finding positive outlets or doing this or that, he started to drink. And he'd get scratched and he'd drink more. And then he'd come to the rink kind of hungover and he'd play bad. So then he'd get scratched again. And it was like this vicious cycle, this vicious circle that went on for him for 4 years. And unfortunately, you know, 9 years later out of college, he wound up overdosing with drugs. And I think that it all started in college. You know, I mean, obviously there's underlying mental factors that go back to, I'm sure, his childhood, but like I look back and, you know, I wish that I would have like done something to been like, you know, instead of drinking tonight, like let's go do this or like, let's go do that. And, maybe helped him get out of that circle. And, we were really close. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from and, yeah. You know, for anyone listening, like, do you have any advice? Like, you know, instead of like going and drinking, if you could go back and tell yourself when you got into those situations, if you could tell yourself, hey, like go do this instead, is there something that you think could have taken the place of, you know, getting that drink in your hand after you had that down, that low?
I mean, I think, you know, as an athlete, I think most people can probably relate most to just going in and working your ass off at the gym. I mean, that's, you know, besides the, you know, releasing endorphins and all the science behind that. And it really, you know, you're not going to put yourself in a worse place by going and working out at the gym when you're frustrated, pissed off, upset. Yeah, I mean, I think that's always been something that I've done immediately, you know, until the drinking really, really took the sole place of coping with difficult things going on. I think that's probably the one thing that I know has done wonders for me, especially in sobriety. That's, you know, something that I've kept up with as much as I can during this process to, you know, whether I'm having a good day and want to kind of celebrate going to work out and feeling good about myself after that, or if I have a tough day to kind of clear my mind and get a workout in and sort of hit the refresh button. Besides that, I mean, I think, you know, the thing that most people don't do when they sort of start to go down the rabbit hole, is to talk to someone. And for me, I feel like it was asking for help did not ever come easy to me. I love to kind of help other people through their struggles. I think I'm, you know, a great listener and a good friend in that regard. I'm always, happy to be, you know, an ear for someone to kind of talk to through problems and stuff. But when it comes to my own problems, I've had a very difficult time to reach out when I'm struggling. So I think that just if people know that it can't hurt to, you know, to confide in a close friend or teammate, I mean, if they care about you, they're not going to judge you, and they're going to be there to kind of help you through your struggles. And I think that's where I really dug myself into a deep hole, because the further I got down, the harder it was to reach out to anyone, because you really start to feel like there's not going to be a single person in this entire world that can relate or help out.
Man, that had to have been tough. Like, that had to have been really tough. Like, take us through, you know, that darkest time, because, you know, just even knowing your story, knowing you being a buddy, like, I know you had a seizure because of your drinking, and things got pretty ugly there. So take us through a little bit of the, you know, the darkest time that you had, because you never know. There might be somebody listening that, you know, is going through that right now. There might be somebody listening that is really, really struggling to ask for help. Know they need to ask for help, but just can't seem to take that step. I think we've all who've had some issues have been at that point to varying degrees. So, you know, take us back to kind of like your darkest moment, and what was that like for you?
Well, I mean, there were definitely a couple rough patches I could get into. I mean, I don't know if you even know this, but I struggled with a painkiller addiction. I had two herniated discs back in, I think it was 2012 and 2014, kind of back to back. And, you know, doctors were just throwing me pills left and right. I mean, that was, I think, right when things started to go south, because that, you know, obviously the epidemic across the country is real. I mean, it's been around for a long time, but now with it being so publicized, it really has kind of brought me back to those days when it took a stranglehold on. I mean, when I started to realize that my bottle of pills was getting empty, it would be like the walls were caving in on me. It was definitely a dark point in my life. I kicked that just cold turkey. It was probably the most physical pain I've ever had in my life, and did it with really no one being aware that I had a problem with that. So if you can imagine, I mean, I'd be, you know, tossing and turning, sweating, puking for about a week straight, and went into work and was, you know, shivering, and it was tough. I mean, that was definitely one of the more difficult times I've gone through in life. And then after that, when I was able to get through that by myself, then the drinking just became like a daily. Like, I don't think I took more than, you know, two or three days off over the course of, I don't know how many years, just straight, you know, and it is sad to think about, looking back at that. But I mean, it was just part of my routine. I mean, it was a habit that I formed where it was just comfort. I would, you know, be ready to go as soon as I got home from work, grab a beer, and it pretty much continued on until I went to bed. And it went from, you know, I was always a, you know, social drinker, wanted to be around people. And as this addiction takes over, that is the sole thing that you care about. And it doesn't matter if someone's with you or not. And most of the time, at least from what I've heard in, my AA meetings, a lot of people resort to drinking alone because you feel the most safe. You don't have anyone sitting there judging you, saying, wow, he just went up and got three beers to my one. What the hell is wrong with this guy? And you're always worried about people questioning you. I had plenty of people sort of hint to me that they thought I had a problem. And those are the people that you sort of maybe not necessarily cut out of your lives, but you tune them out because that's the last thing an alcoholic wants to hear, is that they have a problem.
Dude, I can't even like honestly handle this right now because it's just crazy because like I did not know that you were addicted to painkillers and we were hanging out at the time and I knew you had your back stuff. Yeah. You know, I knew that that was going on and you were in a lot of pain. I didn't even know you were taking painkillers for it. But my heart is like sinking in my stomach right now because I just like, we're best friends, but we're good enough buddies where, you know, I sit here and like, man, Jesus, like I should have freaking known or I should have seen something. The fact that you had to suffer in silence, like as a friend, you know, it's crazy. Like, what was that like? I couldn't even imagine that, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I've had plenty of good buddies say they wish they had known, they would have punched me in the face or hugged me or both, just to, you know, kind of tell me that they were there for me. And I just really, it is such a scary thought to open up and tell people about that part of your life, because for one, that could be taken away from you. And when you are physically and mentally addicted to anything, having someone else take that from you, not on your own accord, but just having someone pull that from you, like out of your grips, is the scariest thing that you could imagine. So yeah, it would have been great to talk to people about it, but that would have meant that I would be risking, you know, having something taken away from me that I was using as a crutch, that crutch was holding me up.
Man, dude. Like, that's crazy. Like, I'm sorry you had to kind of go through some of that stuff, like, you know, on your own, but I can, you know, I can empathize, not certainly to the degree that you did, but, you know, I've been open on this podcast that, you know, I suffered from some anxiety stuff when I was done playing and also when I was done coaching. And, you know, I know that feeling where it's like, you don't want anybody to know that there's something wrong with you. You know, you have this persona that, you know, you want people to think you're, you know, because like in my experience, you know, kind of like had this pretty decent hockey career and was a Division I assistant coach and, you know, had a lot of friends and, you know, everybody kind of saw me as this kind of positive guy. And the fact that I had this like pit in my stomach that, you know, if anybody knew like what I was actually kind of struggling with, like people would think about me differently. And you know, it's for me, like it was really, really, really hard to ask for help. And I'm very glad that I did. You know, it wasn't at the same extent to where you were, but I can certainly empathize with like, that is not an easy thing to do. But like when you do it, the other question I have for you is like, you know, what kind of made you reach out? Because that's so, so, so hard. Like, what was it about your situation that you were kind of like, okay, like I need to tell somebody about this, whether it was somebody that you knew or whether it was somebody that you didn't know, what was kind of the tipping point for you?
Well, you know, I actually didn't reach out per se. I mean, I sort of, you know, long story short, you know, I moved to Albany with my now wife, Natalie, and we, you know, we're living together. I was sort of bouncing around from one job that I originally moved there for to substitute teaching. I'm just sort of figuring things out there, being in a new city, and picked up where I left off after, you know, that seizure I had about a year and a half ago. I picked right up with drinking heavily and was hiding it. Not the fact that I was drinking, but how much. And sort of got caught, you know, hiding booze around the apartment. And it was sort of, I don't know if it was necessarily like a cry for help or sort of waiting for someone to catch on and then to kind of kick me in the ass to get help. But you know, that was what happened. I sort of, you know, surrendered. I mean, I was pretty much, it was almost a relief, like, okay, finally I don't have anywhere to hide and I need help. And I had friends, family, all, you know, completely engulf me with support, which again is another scary thought for anyone with an addiction to drugs or alcohol, is what are people going to think, and am I going to end up with absolutely no one in my life? And that couldn't be further from the case as far as my situation. With the support I've had, it's been unbelievable. I wouldn't be where I am today without my friends and family. Toph, I've kept you in the loop with this whole process and what I went through with my seizure and the aftermath of that. So you're definitely one of those people who's been right there to support me. But yeah, I mean it was a sigh of relief that I didn't have to hide anything anymore. I went to a detox center in Albany for 5 days. Thought I was going in for just a quick overnight, and they told me to take off my clothes, put on a nightgown or a hospital gown, put all my stuff in a locker, and they were like, "You're not leaving until you're ready to go." And I said, "When the hell is that?" And they said, "We'll let you know." So 5 days later, and it was eye opening. You see a whole different world in places like that with heroin addicts and all the way down the line of different types of addictions and struggles and kind of where people are at with their there were people who had been in there 10, 15 times over the course of a couple of years. So I was sort of a rookie when it came to that.
They didn't haze you or anything, did they?
But, no hazing. No, the rules against hazing.
Oh, yeah.
I went to detox for 5 days while I was in there, kind of figured out with my family and Natalie what the next step was. Found a place down in Florida that I had a buddy from Ithaca. He went to this place down in Florida that was very highly regarded for a rehab center. So I went down there for 75 days. And I came out. The biggest thing I needed to do, aside from getting through the withdrawal, which was brutal, was sort of rewiring my brain, because I don't think you understand, like, when I was at my low, if you had asked me to do anything that didn't involve drinking, like if you called me and said, "Hey, do you want to go for a skate on Friday night?" I mean, for one, I'd be like, "Well, were you going to happy hour before or after or during?" But if you said there was no booze involved, I'd probably come up with some excuse that I couldn't make it. That's where I was at. And this is hockey, where that's something that I've loved more than anything in the entire world and put so much time and effort into. And then there I was, if it didn't involve drinking, I was probably not real interested.
Let me ask you this. I don't know what kind of cultures in the locker room, teams and coaches and stuff you had in your high school years and college, but do you think that if you had a coach and a team that, at the beginning of every season, and you believe that the coaches really meant it, if they were like, if anyone has any problems or anything they need to talk about or anything going on in their life, whether it's hockey or outside of hockey, we want you to come talk to us. We're here to help you. We're here to do everything we can to make you better people and better hockey players. Do you think that maybe you would have reached out to someone? If you knew all your teammates were all together and everyone wanted to help everyone and the coaches were there for you, do you think maybe you would have reached out, or did you have that and you still would have kept it, kind of a secret?
I think at that point, in college, I'm sure I was, far and away, well on my way to having a drinking problem. If I didn't have a real, drinking problem in college, I was definitely, training for it. As far as, you know, people being there for support. I'm sure the coaches at one point or another kind of held their hand out, maybe not to me specifically, because again, it's, you know, you're looking around and you guys are all going out together and drinking, having a good time. And I don't think I had lost the manageability of my life yet. You know, I was still able to, I might've felt like, you know, complete shit out on the ice a couple times a week, but I was still able to show up and work my butt off. And I might not have been playing my best, but it wasn't like, oh man, this kid's got a major problem. Like he's missing practice or he's, you know, he's reeking like booze or whatever. I mean, I think that, at least to my knowledge, no one on my team in college was at the point where it was like a clear cut case of, you know, alcoholism where you need to reach out or have an intervention or anything. But as far as people being there for support, I mean, I don't think that I would have even taken anyone up on it because I don't think I would have probably gotten to the bottom. You know, people talk about hitting rock bottom and that's sort of what you need to do to realize you have a problem. I don't think that I would have, realized on my own. And when people come and tell you or ask you like, hey, if you have a problem, come talk to me. I think you sort of push those people away, even if you know deep down you have a problem because you haven't figured it out to the full extent on your own yet.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Well, I mean, it's just part of the college culture too, right? Like work hard, party hard, all that kind of stuff. Like, geez, I remember it because Geneseo and Cornell are what, about an hour and a half away from each other. And every so often your boys would come down to party with us and we knew there was going to be a freaking hole in the wall in the house or something. You guys were a freaking rare breed up there.
Put it on my tab.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, one of the things that like, you know, we've talked a lot about the dark times, but like one of the things I wanted to ask you, Frenchie, cause I have some thoughts on this too, having gone to, you know, counseling is like, What was that like for you, whether it was AA or counseling for some mental health issues? Like, you know, what did you kind of learn and what was that process like for you as you were kind of figuring your stuff out after you had kind of recognized that you had a problem?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, growing up, I was happy all the time. It didn't really take anything for me to have a smile on my face. And somewhere down the road that changed. I'm not sure when or what caused it exactly, but it became more and more difficult for me to have that happiness. And then you start as a happy kid, you kind of then start to question like, what am I doing wrong? What am I unhappy about? Like I have nothing to be unhappy about. I, you know, love hockey, you know, good athlete, come from a good family, no family problems, you know, no real struggles, you know, nothing that really should be, you sort of look around, you're like, well, so-and-so is happy and they're going through some really tough stuff or,
it's almost like you feel guilty, right? Like you have, like, you know, you have it good and you're like, why the hell am I feeling so, like there are people that have much worse problems than I do. Like, what is wrong with me? Like, what is, like, does that make sense? Cause I felt that too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you really look around, you're like, what exactly is wrong with me? And then you start questioning like your sanity, like, you know, anxiety just started to become more and more a part of my life, which when you have the reputation of being just like this carefree, easygoing, fun-loving guy with a smile on his face all the time that loves being around people. And then when that starts to change inside of you, you don't want to let anyone else in on that because that's not who you're supposed to be. So, I mean, you put on a face and then you go home and you're like, I just had to struggle through like a dinner with friends because my anxiety was like going through the roof. And then when you couple that with with a drinking problem, you have the actual, you know, physical symptoms of, you know, withdrawal or anxiety from that going on, along with any other built up issues you have with anxiety or depression or stress or what have you. And it just becomes like a downhill slide fast.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. Like, I remember at my lower times, like I felt it physically in my chest. So like I would have, and I didn't recognize this until I went to, until I actually went to go seek some counseling, like, cause everything that I was talking about, I was taking my hand and I was kind of like, it's tough being on a podcast. You can't see me, but like my hand would always go like to my chest as I was talking. So like the therapist, she's like, what are you doing with your hand? I'm like, what do you mean? What am I doing with my hand? She's like, you keep going like up to your chest with your hand. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure. She was like, well, describe to me kind of like the physical stuff that you were going through when you were like, you know, you couldn't get out of bed in the morning or whatever it may be. And I'd be like, I had these really bad chest pains. And I thought they were allergies. Like, I moved to Texas and I thought they were allergies. That's what some people told me. Uh-huh. And then like, you know, 7-8 years later, as I'm sitting there, it's like, no, dude, like that was like severe anxiety. And, it's just like, it's crazy. Cause you know, one of the things that I kind of found in going to counseling, and I went like 5 or 6 times, like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that crazy big deal type stuff. But like, I honestly feel like every single person on earth should go, because when you go to counseling, like, all you're doing is talking to somebody that has no hidden agenda. You're talking to somebody that you know is not going to judge you, and you just kind of get to vent your feelings. And then they help you out with some strategies to like help you kind of figure stuff out. And so I don't know if like that's kind of what your experience was like, but for me, it was almost like, I don't want to say like it wasn't a big deal, because it was, but like looking back on it now, it's like, man, like, I can't believe it was that hard for me to actually go and ask for help, because once I did it, it just seemed so like the weight was off the shoulders and the chest pain went away, and just being able to talk to somebody that you know isn't going to judge you, like, it was just so unbelievably freeing. And we all go through shit. Like, we all have stuff that we go through. And imagine if everybody felt comfortable enough to just go to somebody and say, hey, like, I'm going through this right now. What do you think? And know that that person isn't going to judge you. And it's unfortunate, the world we live in, like, that's really, really hard. But like, did you have kind of like a similar experience to me when it came to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this whole process, it's going to be a continued education, for me, as far as finding out kind of what works. I mean, there's no secret recipe, with recovery and addiction and, that whole process. I mean, every day it changes. One day I might think that AA is the end all be all, fix it for me, go to a great meeting, hear some great stuff, walk out of there chipper and ready to go. The next night I might be in kind of a crappy mood and force myself to go to a meeting. And, you know, worst case, I walk out of there, you know, hearing some stuff that I might or might not relate to. But there's some people who literally go to meetings to ensure that for at least an hour, they're not in the midst of alcohol or putting themselves in a position like that. Yeah. That's 1 hour a day that they know that they're safe. So I think that, you know, that works for me some days it's, you know, doesn't fix any issues going on in my head. Some days going to the gym is like, will 100% help out depending on what mood I'm in. Sometimes that kind of, you know, just makes me tired and ready to go to bed. It really, you know, I've seen different therapists, whether it was at my rehab facility or, you know, in Albany, I was seeing a guy there once a week. And I think that when it comes down to it, when you're talking about these issues that you were talking about, Topher, that I've had, worst case, if it's someone that you feel safe with and comfortable with, worst case, you walk out, getting something off of your chest that was causing literally you to not be able to breathe properly.
Yeah.
Best case, they give you some advice and tools to use, and you're, you know, well on your way to kind of, you know, getting better and better each time. But, I think that you get into a little bit of a problem when you walk in thinking that you're going to get this advice that's going to fix things that day. And I think for me, that's totally. Sort of something that I need to remind myself of when I walk into a meeting, is that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, but it's sure better than where I was, you know, prior to getting sober. So
that's awesome. It's like Tolfin and I always say, like, you know, you build every day. You know, you don't look at where you're going to be in 2 months, like get better for tomorrow and then get better right. again the day after that, and kind of look at it more as that, at that type of developmental model than just trying to fast forward to the end.
Right. Yeah. It's progress, not perfection, is a big saying in AA. So, I mean, it's hard to remind yourself of that because, you know, everyone tends to want immediate results, or to say, like, hey, I stopped drinking yesterday, so you know, why haven't I lost 20 pounds and gotten a sweet new job? And you know, you want everything immediately. You want results quickly, and you think you make one change like that, and it's just going to turn your life around. And it really has been a day by day process for me, and you know, every day has its struggles. Every day, you know, I realize a new thing that I need to work on beyond just the drinking. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a process.
Well, man, I mean, this is so unbelievably strong of you to share your story with us. And, you know, that's one of the things that is such a misconception about asking for help, is like, people think that if you ask for help, you're actually weak, but it's the exact opposite. Like, when you share your stories and you ask for help, that's the strongest thing you could ever do. You know, to step outside your comfort zone like that. And, you know, we really appreciate it. And, you know, kind of the last thing we wanted to ask you, man, was like, you know, what's life like now in sobriety? You know, you got a kid on the way, you're married, you're starting a new job, like, things seem to be on the up and up for you. Kind of where are you at right now? And you know, how have you kind of used some of the struggles that you've had to kind of put a new perspective on where you're going now?
Well, I think what I've seen, besides just, you know, feeling a million times better every day I wake up, excited, ready to go. I think that the everyday emotions that I was just completely drowning out. I mean, I could find any reason to drink, whether it be happy, sad, pissed off, depressed, surprised. And I couldn't find a reason not to drink, even having a seizure because of it. So, I mean, that, you know, now being able to experience those everyday emotions that I didn't have for years has been amazing. You know, even the negative ones, like stress and anxiety, I know that I can work through those things. They're not, that has been a process in itself. I mean, just learning to, it's really, a new, relatively new thing for me. And I kind of needed to reteach myself how to deal with things like that. You know, you can ask my wife and my parents and anyone else close to me. It's has not been, easy for them to be around me in some regards, but, it's been definitely a learning process for me to handle those types of everyday emotions that most people have been handling their entire lives and seem to be doing fine. And I, you know, every day that I experience a new thing that I would have drank over, that I'm able to get past that without immediately reaching for a bottle, has been a small victory that I've then been able to kind of tally up as the days have gone on. The excitement of, you know, this baby on the way that we have, due in May, I am beyond excited. It's going to be, you know, the best thing in the entire world, And, you know, we're both very excited and looking forward to that. And I think that I'm giving myself the best chance to be the best father that I could ever be in sobriety. I mean, I truly believe that. I think I'm a dependable, loyal, caring, and giving person, whereas I told myself I was all of those things when I was drinking, but I wasn't. I mean, I've kind of been able to come to terms with a lot of hard truths like that through this process. But I mean, I feel wholeheartedly like I'm who I have always wanted to be. And I can only really give myself a chance to be that person in sobriety.
That's unreal, dude. That's so cool. You're going to be such an awesome dad too. Do you guys know if you're having a boy or a girl yet?
It's a girl.
Oh, I knew it. Oh, dude, you are going to love being the dad of a girl. You are going to be so, like, I was even thinking as you were kind of talking, I wanted to ask you that. I'm like, he's got to have a girl because he's going to be the best girl dad ever. Oh, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, dude. It's so cool. Oh, man, you're going to be such a good dad.
Yeah, until they start calling boys who say, hello, Lavecchio's resident.
So true. Well, then at least he knows that his girlfriend's going out, or his daughter's going out with a complete geek. So
won't have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
Nerd alert.
Well, that's awesome, dude. Well, the one thing else.
Yeah, I think that's probably my favorite episode I've listened of yours. Your podcast is the moms the other week. That's awesome. Oh, cool.
That was the funnest one that we've had. We had a blast kind of going back down memory lanes with our moms. I think we got some brownie points from the moms there too, which are always good. Yeah, which are always good. Well, dude, this was amazing. But, you know, the last question that I wanted to ask you is, you know, I can imagine, you know, the way that you're talking and your story and stuff, like, you know, I can imagine there might be some kids in college who are kind of going through some similar stuff, because we do have a lot of kids that listen to this podcast, whether that be, you know, in youth hockey or in college. So if there was like any piece of advice, you know, having gone through what you went through, that you could give to, you know, kids out there that are going to be in kind of those similar situations that you were in, you know, whether it was junior hockey or college hockey or even after, you know, what's some nuggets that you can give to them?
You know, like we've talked about a couple times already, do not be afraid to reach out for help. I mean, it is a scary thought for many reasons. Having, you know, people judge you or tell you what or what not to do. And a person like me with an addiction issue immediately justifies, well, you know, I hang out with so-and-so and so-and-so and they drink way more than I do. Like, I don't have a problem, they do. I think that getting past that first step of telling literally anyone, it could be someone who you barely know that you're sitting next to that, you know, doesn't know you or care to judge you or anything. I mean, the first step is just telling a person about a problem. I mean, if you don't feel comfortable telling someone that you think, you know, your relationship might be in jeopardy because of this problem, which I can guarantee you that if a person loves you, it does not matter what you're going through. They're going to be there for you regardless of whether or not they can actually relate on that level. I can tell you firsthand, I've had, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of people reach out to me that I haven't talked to in quite a while, just to ask how I'm doing, because again, I've made sure to get it out in the open to make sure that I'm there to reciprocate if anyone is going through a similar issue. But yeah, so getting past that first barrier of just saying it out loud to someone sort of makes it a reality. And then as far as you know, the next steps are equally as difficult. I think that the fear of life changing, I mean, it's life changes, and it's you know, different for everyone, but everything that I've seen in sobriety has been beyond amazing in comparison to what life I was leading and heading towards while I was drinking. It's night and day. Just being able to enjoy every single day and all the things that I'm able to experience with work and family and friends. I was just completely drowning out for years. Talking about it, like we said, the Bell Let's Talk, I think this was a perfect timed episode for you guys. I mean, I think that luckily with that movement, with many others, I think that the push for people being as open as possible instead of holding these demons and dark places in is huge. I mean, for anyone going through a struggle, an addiction with drugs or alcohol or really anything, you immediately feel some sense of relief just talking to someone about it. And it doesn't have to be someone going through the same thing. Yeah.
That's so awesome. And to any kids, parents, whoever listening to this, like, you know, like we're always trying to teach on this podcast and learn from others, you know, like we got a person right here who's going through why everyone's retweeting that Bell Let's Talk stuff. You know, it's reach out, like don't suffer in silence, tell a teammate, tell a parent, tell a coach. Like everyone in the hockey world is so open to helping each other and want the best for each other. And you know, that's why Toph and I love this game and are so passionate about it. And, you know, obviously this is a different episode than we've done and it's darker, but it's part of the real world. And it's part of the things that not only athletes, but everyone goes through. And we really wanted to have Frenchie on this episode to talk about his struggles. And if you're someone who's going through them, you know, reach out, like talk to somebody. And if you're the teammate of somebody who you think is struggling, go take them aside and say, you know, how are you doing today? How are things going? You know, like Frenchie, how do you think it would be okay for a teammate to approach another teammate if he thinks, you know, he or she that they're going through a problem? Like, how would you have wanted to have been approached in an acceptable manner? You know, even though it's going to be hard, obviously, but if I noticed that you were in this struggle, you're in this problem, like what's something that I could have said, you know, that maybe would have had you open up?
Well, I think that's definitely a fine line. There's no bad way. I mean, there are obviously more or less effective ways depending on the person that you're talking to. But, I think just less is probably more. I mean, just opening up and saying, if you have any problem whatsoever, and maybe not pinpoint it down to like, hey, I think you're drinking too much. Cause people don't know what the underlying issues are. I mean, someone might be drinking way too much because of, you know, crippling anxiety or, going through a real, you know, rough patch emotionally that they're trying to kind of keep within themselves. To just generalize it and say, I'm one of your brothers on this team. You know, we go to battle every night together. We, do a lot of dumb shit together. We have each other's backs. We, you know, we're family. I mean, just to make it clear that no matter what, that you are there for that person and sort of put the ball in their court. And when they're, you know, if they have come to terms with the fact that they might have a problem with drugs or alcohol or anything, it'll be sort of up to them, but just having that door, the kind of an open door policy, is I think probably the most, effective way to kind of, open that discussion for someone, instead of kind of, you know, accusing them or sort of saying, well, this is how I think, even though I'm, you know, not a doctor or medical professional, to sort of just have, it made very clear that you're, you know, family, and you're someone that they can trust and confide in and sort of just keep it, as, you know, wide open as possible. And just to make sure they know that the door is open.
Well, I think the other thing too, and the reason why I think Bellek's talk is great is it gets so many people to open up and actually share their own experiences. So, like, Bellek's talk, I really don't think would accomplish much unless other people shared their experiences. So, like a Robin Leonard, you know, him opening up about his, you know, his dealing with anxiety and depression and all these other big NHL guys, like, you know, it's proven that shared adversity is one of the, you know, the biggest enhancers of connection, right? Because, you know, when you're saying I'm not okay and it's okay for you, and it's okay for you not to be okay because I know I'm not okay, you know, that I think it allows other people to open up. And I think that's the greatest thing about Bellek's talk and the greatest thing about you coming on this podcast and sharing your story is that I guarantee you there's going to be somebody listening to this, Frenchie, that this is going to change their life, like legitimately, because they're going to be like, hey, you know what, I want to say something to somebody, but I don't feel comfortable with it. But this freaking guy, he goes on this podcast with thousands and thousands of listeners, and he's talking about some dark stuff, and he's come out on the other side from it. And you know, I've heard what he says about it. And, you know, because of that, you know, we can't thank you enough. I do think that, you know, being able to share, you know, some of your struggles, share some of your tough times, it only allows other people to kind of get in and feel more comfortable to share their stuff too, dude. So I really think that you're going to change somebody's life, hopefully multiple people, by coming on this podcast. And, you know, that's unbelievable, man. We can't thank you enough for doing that.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was my pleasure. And just one quick thing also, you guys brought up about the, you know, people sort of coming out and, you know, like myself or people who are even, in positions where they're able to reach, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of, listeners or viewers. I mean, I remember when I was, you know, probably at one of my darkest moments, I came across, is it Rich Clune? So I read his article on the Player Tribune, and that was probably about as close as I came after reading that to reaching out for help, you know, prior to finally going to rehab. But just hearing someone who I related to as far as you know, suiting up every day and kind of going through the struggles of what hockey players and other athletes go through, and the anxiety and having to, you know, kind of save, their persona, and kind of put on a face. Reading all of that really got me about as close to, accepting that I had a problem. I wasn't quite there yet, but I think it was definitely a huge step in the direction that I needed to kind of to be able to relate on that level to someone who went through very similar, you know, transitions and parts of life that I had gone through. So
that's awesome. It's so good to hear that someone in the hockey community was able to at least nudge you in that right direction. And hopefully you're doing that same thing right here with this episode. So we can't thank you enough, man.
Yeah. Thank you guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yep. Thanks, man. Love you, man. Have a, I'm sure I'll see you before, the baby girl is born, but, pamper that wife of yours as she goes through her final stages of pregnancy here. She's going to need it.
I'm laying on her pregnancy pillow right now. Actually,
love it. All right, guys. All right, Frenchie, see you, man.